to do a little bit something different.
As soon as this was published, a lot of people got very, very excited.
What was the study itself?
They haven't really found any magic bullets.
What were the outcomes that they were looking at?
If these medications were given much sooner, we might have seen some different results. We need thiamine.
Welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Excited, very excited to have this podcast. Thanks so much for joining us here on this podcast. We're going to touch on a sepsis care topic, specifically in patients with septic shock. And you may be thinking, oh, you guys cover sepsis so much. Is it antibiotics? Are you going to be talking about fluids this time? What about vasopressors? What about steroids? Well, we're going to do a little bit something different, and that's actually based on some recent trials examining the use of vitamin C and other vitamin regimens, such as the vitamin C hydrocortisone and thiamine cocktail that has been bantered about in recent years with respect to treating patients with septic shock. And to help guide me through that discussion, I'm joined by a very, very special guest. We are so thankful to have Dr. Gabriel Wardy, who is an assistant clinical professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine and the Division of Pulmonary Critical Care and Sleep Medicine at the University of California, San Diego. So Gabe, thanks so much for joining me here on CCPEM.
Thank you, actually. This is a topic that I'm very excited to speak about because I know, at least at my shop, there's been a lot of interest in kind of the so-called merit cocktail, giving vitamin C, hydrocortisone, and thiamine to patients with septic shock. And we've kind of been a little bit in the dark if it's actually making a difference in our patients. So I think the study that we're going to talk about today, the vitamins trial, actually gives us some pretty good insights into that. But before we jump into the actual trial itself, I think, you know, we do need to talk about the background of what we're going over, why we're doing it, and understanding kind of the rationale for using this cocktail. And I think we all know that sepsis is one of the most common conditions that we see in the hospital. And I'm sure everyone that listens to the show is familiar with some of the statistics that get thrown at them every day by hospital administrators about how the burden of sepsis is so many billions of dollars in the United States right now. About 40% of hospital deaths have an associated diagnosis. And honestly, if you look at how the treatment of sepsis has changed in the past 30, 40 years, it hasn't really done that much. If you look back to 1973 at what they recommended in Harrison's Medicine 6th edition, you saw some things that honestly sound pretty familiar to what we do today. Early volume resuscitation, early appropriate antibiotics, starting vasopressors, considering steroids and potentially transfusion patients. And throughout the past 4 or 5 decades, we've tried a lot of different things, but we haven't really found any magic bullets besides what we already kind of knew. And so a lot of people got very, very excited when Paul Merrick published a study in Chest a few years ago, where he coined this term, the Merrick cocktail, and brought into play a relatively simple group of therapies, lumped them all together, and showed some fantastic results at his shop. And so what he did was to draw on some evidence looking at the use of vitamin C, thiamine, and steroids, and lump them all together into something that is commonly called now the Merrick cocktail. Now, these therapies start to make sense when we look at them one by one. Let's start with vitamin C. We know that this water-soluble vitamin is necessary for the synthesis of our endogenous catecholamines. It's also a potent antioxidant that supports immune function and prevents endothelial dysfunction. We've started to see some emerging evidence that shows that critically ill patients who are resuscitated and receive high doses of vitamin C may require less fluid resuscitation and might even see a mortality benefit. And so what he did was, rather than focusing on identification, antibiotics, or fluids, he chose to focus on these three therapies altogether. And if you look at it, the biologic plausibility, the rationale for what he was doing, was that a lot of these patients that have septic shock are deficient in either thiamine, vitamin C, or steroids. For instance, if we start talking about vitamin C, it's something that I didn't really think too much about that our patients with septic shock are deficient in, but a lot of them actually are. And we need vitamin C for multiple reasons. The first thing is that it's a key part of the synthesis of a lot of catecholamines and cortisol in our body. If we're deficient in this, a lot of times we're not going to be able to make our endogenous epinephrine, norepinephrine. We also know that vitamin C is a potent antioxidant and helps with immune function. So if we have a deficiency there, we're going to get in trouble, hence that being part of this cocktail. The second thing that he added to this was thiamine.
And what we know about thiamine is that approximately 20 to 70% of patients with severe sepsis and septic shock have a deficiency in this. Now, the reason for administering thiamine goes back to biochemistry. When we enter the Krebs cycle, we go from glucose to pyruvate to acetyl-CoA, and then we enter the Krebs cycle. Thiamine is a cofactor to help take pyruvate to acetyl-CoA. In its absence, pyruvate is metabolized to lactate. We've also started to see small studies come out looking at the impact of administrating high doses of thiamine to patients with septic shock. And what we see is that typically patients clear their lactate quicker, and there might even be a mortality benefit, particularly in those that have a significant thiamine deficiency.
And what we know with critically ill patients is there's a particular with sepsis, about 20 to 70% of these have some kind of deficiency. But basically, we need thiamine, basically, as we go from lactate to pyruvate to get back into the Krebs cycle. And if we lack thiamine, our lactate will be unable to be metabolized and let us go back into the Krebs cycle to create energy. Steroids are something else that Dr. Merrick reintroduced in a one-size-fits-all approach and brought these in as something that we know that despite the controversies with steroids kind of changing mortality, yes or no, there's been conflicting evidence on that. What we do know is that there's good evidence that this actually causes a quicker resolution of septic shock in patients. So what he did is he basically wrapped these three therapies all together and said, let's give these to all our patients that have septic shock. And he actually had some pretty fantastic findings. So again, this was a before and after study at his institution. But what they found using this cocktail was that of the 47 patients that he treated with it, they had a mortality of about 8.5%. The ones in the control group that didn't get his therapy had a mortality of about 40.4%.
In addition, they found that patients that were treated with this cocktail had a shorter duration of vasoactive medications, had a lower requirement for renal replacement therapy, had a quicker resolution of their SOFA scores, and cleared their procalcitonin quicker than patients that did not receive this therapy.
Which was markedly statistically significant, but they also saw a lot of other important outcomes that we care about. Duration of vasoactive medications was much shorter in the group that got his cocktail. The length of stay in his ICU was much shorter in those that had this cocktail given, less renal replacement therapy for the patients that got this cocktail, and a much quicker resolution of the SOFA scores of these patients. So it was a resounding success in these 47 patients. And as soon as this was published, a lot of people got very, very excited about this. And because of that excitement, a lot of people started empirically to use this in their patients with septic shock. But we didn't really have any randomized trials that kind of looked at this until very recently. And the study that we're going to talk about today addresses these kind of head on, actually, and I think does a pretty darn good job of at least giving us some more evidence to help guide how we approach these patients. So the study that we're going to talk about is called the Vitamins Trial, and it's entitled The Effect of Vitamin C, Hydrocortisone and Thiamine versus Hydrocortisone Alone on Time Alive and Free of Vasopressor Support Among Patients with Septic Shock. It was published in JAMA just last month. And really what they wanted to do was compare the resolution of septic shock and duration of vasoactive medications in patients randomized to receive either hydrocortisone alone or high-dose thiamine, vitamin C, and hydrocortisone together.
So it seems like this would be looking at exactly that question, trying to further the research, further the study in a little bit more systematic way of Merrick's study, and then replicate, is that significant decrease in mortality with this cocktail really continuing or validating it in additional patient populations? Would that seem to be right?
I think that's a very fair assessment of what they were trying to do.
So, Gabe, take us through the study specifically. This sounds to be one of those really big need-to-know studies early here in 2020, especially in the treatment of septic shock. So kind of give us the high level. What was the study itself?
Yeah, so what they did, you know, a lot of things that we like to see in studies when we kind of talk about them. It was a multi-center, parallel group randomized trial that took place from May 2018 to July 2019, and it occurred in 10 ICUs across Australia, New Zealand, and Brazil. Now, if you look at the patients they included, and this is very, very important, right? It was patients that were admitted to the ICU with a primary diagnosis of septic shock, and they used sepsis 3 definition, which basically meant that you needed a suspected or documented infection, a 2-point increase in your SOFA score, a lactate greater than 2, and importantly, at least 2 hours of vasopressor dependence. Now, one of the things we're going to talk about this with the limitations of this is that patients had to be enrolled within 24 hours of meeting septic shock criteria. Now, who did they exclude? Well, any pediatric patient, so anyone less than age 18. If you had a pre-existing do not resuscitate order, if death was felt to be imminent, and if the treating providers felt that there was any strong indication outside of the study for administering hydrocortisone, right? Namely, someone with primary adrenal insufficiency, they didn't include these patients. And again, also, right, they excluded patients that had septic shock greater than 24 hours, as well as some rarer conditions, patients that had strongyloides, patients that also had any kind of tuberculosis or parasitic infection.
And in the intervention group, the authors replicated the cocktail used by Dr. Merrick in his 2017 publication.
And really what they did in this is, like I said, you know, they tried to copy the Merrick cocktail as well as they could. And so, you know, the intervention group, what they did was they basically copied what Paul Merrick did at his shop, and they administered vitamin C 1.5 grams every 6 hours to these patients. Hydrocortisone was 50 milligrams every 6 hours, and thiamine was 200 milligrams every 12 hours. The control group was just hydrocortisone 50 milligrams every 6 hours. Now, one of the important points about this is that the treating intensivist could administer thiamine at their discretion in the control group, but they could not administer vitamin C.
All right. So what were the outcomes that they were looking at? What was that primary outcome of this study?
First, when I was reading through this, I thought it was going to be all about mortality. And I think this is something that we love to jump to in critical care literature. Is there a mortality benefit? But the study investigators chose not to do that. And actually, looking back, I think they were pretty smart about it. What they chose to look at was time alive and free of vasopressors at 7 days after randomization. And specifically, what they defined as a cessation of vasopressors was keeping them off these vasoactive medications for at least 4 hours and having a mean arterial pressure greater than 65 millimeters of mercury or a blood pressure goal set by the treating clinician. So again, not looking at mortality, but rather in the first week, how long was someone alive and off vasoactive medication? Now, secondary outcomes, there's quite a bit of these. Some of them, I think, ones we get excited about, they looked at 28-day mortality, 90-day mortality, ICU and hospital mortality. They looked at 28-day cumulative mechanical ventilation-free days. They looked at days free of renal replacement therapy. They looked at the change in SOFA score by day 3. They looked at ICU-free days at day 28. They looked at hospital length of stay. So quite a bit of the secondary outcomes that people get very excited about, but not the primary outcome looking at mortality.
All right, so drum roll, what are the key results or key findings of the study?
All right. So the first thing was they got 211 patients that they included in their analysis, and they didn't find any difference in their primary outcome. Namely, patients that got the Merrick cocktail did not do better than those that just got steroids. So if you look at the median duration of patients in the intervention group that were alive and off vasopressors in the first week, it was about 122 hours. And in the control group, it was 124.6 hours. So no difference. Now, when we start looking at the secondary outcomes, there really wasn't much a difference in many of these either. There was no change in all-cause mortality at day 28, at day 90, or hospital mortality. There was really no difference also in the number of days that patients needed for pressors at 28 days. There wasn't a difference in mechanical ventilator-free days or renal replacement-free days. And really the only thing they found that was in favor of the Merrick cocktail was that the change in SOFA score was greater in the intervention group at 3 days. They saw a median change of -2 versus -1 in the control group.
Any other secondary outcomes? I'm assuming a lot of trials look at adverse events. Was anybody harmed by receiving this cocktail?
a little bit of a background on the potential harm that people talk about with these, right? Is I think everyone agrees that thiamine is relatively safe. The only people I think that feel harmed are our pharmacists when we try to use a lot of it, and they get a little bit upset about that. There has been some concern that vitamin C, if given in high enough amounts, can actually cause calcium oxalate stones, causing some kind of obstructive nephropathy. And they didn't really find that in either group. Steroids, as we all know, have the potential for hyperglycemia. They found one patient in the intervention group that had that, and one patient in the control group had a GI bleed. And again, when looking at this, this was up to the physicians that were treating the patients to record these. It wasn't truly a very rigorous way of kind of defining these. But again, no statistical difference in these adverse events.
So overall, it seems like a negative study in that the vitamin C, thiamine, hydrocortisone, really, the authors didn't find any difference in their primary outcome of time alive and free of vasopressors by day 7, and really no significant difference in their secondary outcomes across the various mortality of 28, 90 day, and then in-hospital mortality. I got to imagine, though, that with a trial like this published in JAMA, multi-center, there's got to be some limitations somewhere. Am I correct?
You are. You know, the authors actually, I think, did a very good job identifying what they felt were the limitations of their study. The first thing to say, right, is that it was open label and it wasn't blinded. One of the things I was at least kind of excited about seeing was if there's any way that we can tease out the effects of was anything related to patients getting vitamin C or thiamine. And they didn't really give us the ability to kind of see those individual effects. And unfortunately, they didn't measure thiamine levels or vitamin C levels before administering them. That would have been something quite interesting to actually see, you know, if someone had a significant deficiency in either of those, were there any kind of impact of administering these two vitamins? Like we mentioned earlier, the target mean arterial pressure was not standardized, but the treating physicians could set their own, something that the authors did note as a limitation. Some of the other things, too, that I think would have at least kind of helped a little bit with seeing how the two groups were, wasn't that well recorded. Specifically, we didn't know the time to antibiotics in either group, and we didn't know the amount of fluids that either group got as well. Other things that they did report, right, you know, that the trial was not really powered to detect a mortality difference. It was specifically designed to kind of look at this time alive and off vasoactive medications at 7 days. And again, like we just talked about with our adverse events, they were only reported when the treating clinician felt that they were related to the study medications, and there was no true systemic investigation for any kind of adverse effect.
And I think one other thing that you had mentioned a little early on in terms of the inclusion criteria, patients could have septic shock for up to 24 hours as long as they were enrolled before that 24-hour mark. And so fairly long interval, not necessarily early in the development of septic shock.
You know, that's a very, very fair criticism of this trial, right? You know, time and time again, what we see makes a difference in our patients with this condition, right? It's early interventions for them. And that time period of about 24 hours, it really begs the question, right? And it's an appropriate criticism that some people that have been very, very big fans of this cocktail have pointed out, saying that we waited, or the median amount was 12 hours. If these medications were given much sooner, we might have seen some different results.
Well, Gabe, you've done an amazing job with an expert analysis. This paper is hot off the press. It certainly looks at a very hot question or hot topic in the treatment of patients with septic shock. This has been bantered about for a few years, or ever since the Merrick study. And I'm certain that this is one of several papers looking at the effect of vitamin C. And you just did a really bang up job analyzing this for us. As we take a step back, what are your take-home points as it stands now? Taking this article into account, what would you advise our listeners, the key take-home points from this study and thinking about vitamin C moving forward?
I think there are a few things to mention. The first one that really kind of pops up to me is in terms of accepting literature in the medical field. I think everyone really wanted Dr. Merrick's initial trial to be a wonderful success. We've been searching and searching and searching for a magic bullet for patients with severe sepsis and septic shock. And everyone got really excited about this. And I think this is not going to be the final study that looks at this. But I think it serves to remind us that jumping on a single center before and after trial with 94 patients probably isn't the best way to base our decisions. So that's point number one. The second thing when I look at this, as you know, and we mentioned with limitations in this, and I think this opens up fair criticism and where this is probably going to go, is that on average, these patients got their therapies about 12 hours in. Like I just said, everything that we do with sepsis typically needs to be done very, very quickly. We've all seen the studies saying that every hour after hypotension, mortality goes up by 7%. We've all seen the studies that the longer we allow a patient to have inadequate mean arterial blood pressure, their mortality goes up. So if we're going to do this, and I think this really kind of begs the question, is should we be doing this much, much sooner than waiting this long? And one of the things that we will be seeing in the future, and we'll be hearing much, much more about this, is there are at least 37 trials right now that are either enrolling patients, completed enrolling patients, or in the early phases that are looking at some variation of this to help answer this question. Are these vitamins and steroids going to improve outcomes in patients with septic shock? Now, something else that I think is worth mentioning, right, is we've kind of lumped all three of these therapies together. We've said this 1.5 grams of vitamin C. We've said 200 milligrams of thiamine twice a day. And we've said that 50 milligrams of hydrocortisone all lumped together, or at least were tested as a therapy here. And I think one of the things that we'll probably find when all is said and done is that certain patients makes a lot of sense to kind of pick and choose which one of these is most effective for them. I think we all know that anyone that has an absolute deficiency in, let's say, thiamine with beriberi or someone with scurvy because they have absolutely no vitamin C, it makes sense for those patients to get supplementation with those in septic shock, regardless of kind of which side of this debate you fall. Steroids are something too, right, that we've seen the pendulum go from many, many years before I was practicing kind of these mega doses to criticisms of much lower doses. But I think the evidence right now is swung to the point where most people would agree that steroids do hasten recovery of septic shock, whether or not there's a mortality benefit. In terms of our patients that we see in front of us, can we use a personalized approach to figure out which ones would benefit from which aspects of this therapy? You know, what I tell my residents, if you see a patient that you're concerned about having thiamine deficiency, if their lactate's really elevated, if they've got a known history of drinking, if they're a nursing home patient, odds are those are probably going to be the ones that are thiamine deficient, and to consider thiamine, particularly if they're not clearing their lactate. Likewise, patients that have vitamin C deficiency, these are critically ill patients that probably have poor nutritional intake. These are the ones also that probably would benefit from this, but the one-size-fits-all approach, probably not the best thing.
Gabe, thanks so much. I think you've done an outstanding job. We couldn't be more thankful of you joining us here on the podcast. And for any of you who have any questions specifically for Gabe on this vitamin C, this vitamins trial that was just published in JAMA, please let us know. Shoot us an email and I'll forward that on to Gabe for his reply and his thoughts. But Gabe, outstanding job, really bringing us up to speed on really literature that is hot off the press. And as I said, a very, very hot topic in the realm of caring for patients with septic shock. So well done, and our thanks for joining us here on CCPEM.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to speak with you about this. Like I said, in the next few years, we're going to see a lot more data on this to hopefully come up with a much more definitive answer than where we stand right now.
Well, we had talked about a few topics in discussing future podcasts, and I, for one, can't wait to get you back on to discuss a few other things, and perhaps we'll delve into your paper that I think you participated on lactate. Was that in Annals of Emergency Medicine?
That was, yes. We were very excited that Annals decided to accept it. This whole thing with thiamine and lactate, that much more interesting to me.
Congrats on that publication. Well done. And we will look forward to hearing you on the next CCPM podcast. All right. That's going to do it for this podcast. My thanks to Gabe for that outstanding discussion on the vitamins trial. Let us know if you have any questions, but I think we're going to close out this podcast. Once again, this is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks so much for joining us. We will talk to you on our next podcast. Bye for now.